So let's look at this psalm, and first let's look at the physicality of faith that's described in this Psalm 63. Now, this was written by King David, and they believe that he wrote this while he was in the wilderness of Judah, fleeing from Absalom, his son, who was bent on taking over his father's reign. Now, this psalm sounds so peaceful, so you would never guess that he was in the midst of great turmoil when he wrote this. This is a psalm that shows his deep faith and his feeling of total dependence on God, as David says, "My soul thirsts for you." He said, "My flesh faints for you. My lips praise you. I lift my hands and call your name. My soul clings to you, and your right hand upholds me." Have you ever noticed how he uses so much of the body and the soul in his psalms? It's amazing, really, to see how biological his psalms are. King David longs for consolation from God in this tangible, biological way. And he wrote this most beautiful psalm that he probably sang out loud while he played something like a harp, in a prayerful way to console himself for the predicament he was in, which was fleeing for his own life from his own and at one time favorite son. Now, do you ever feel soulfully in need of God in a similar way? Do you ever feel as if your body is hungry and thirsty to be filled with something like that? As if your soul is just aching, or your stomach is just yearning to be filled with food for the soul? I think all of us go through times like this. Some Christian writers discuss how the soul is like a vessel that needs to be filled, and that if we don't fill it with faith in God, we will feel incomplete and be searching for other ways to fill it. Having worked with people with addictions, I learned that the 12-step program was just so important for recovery from alcohol and narcotics because it helped the addicts see that they are trying to fill their feelings of emptiness with drugs or trying to numb their feelings with drugs. When we don't have faith in God, our minds still yearn to have faith in something. So we fill that yearning with things like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Now, it sounds funny, but I'll show you how serious I am about this. Sex addicts will tell you that they were always looking for more than just the sex act. They were yearning for a sense of love and belonging from those that they had sex with, but still felt like they couldn't trust. And so they would keep moving from person to person, trying to fill that need for belonging and love. Drug addicts, Grateful Deadheads, and the 49er faithful are all worshiping something, aren't they? Drug addicts live for that next fix, and they worship their drug or glass of wine and feel that they can't live without it. Some people shop to get that high from purchasing things, which does temporarily lift our spirits when we're shopping. Some people, when they walk into a mall, all of a sudden they feel high. Some people worship their jobs, and they cling to their jobs for all their fulfillment. And then when they retire, they feel so empty, some of them pass away soon after they retire. Often those people become workaholics while they're working and then feel totally lost when there's no more job. Grateful Dead or other band groupies worship the bands they follow, and sometimes to the point of losing their jobs or going in great debt, traveling to follow them around and getting the best seats at their concerts. And even the 49er Faithful group has recently been promoted as a method for increasing their fan base. You can see by their video, their intention is to encourage people to worship the 49ers. And now, as a disclaimer, I have been a 49er fan since the early 80s. But now look at how they use spiritual inspiration to describe their followers, who they call the faithful of the 49ers. Let's turn down the lights and see if we can show this.
By definition, it's something that is felt with strong conviction without tangible evidence of its existence. Many claim to have it, but how do we attain it? It can't be held. It can't be sold. But it can be passed down. Faith is invaluable to those who feel it. How is it that this belief can unite us regardless of our differences? It's because of conviction, that feeling inside that links so many, from the far corners of the earth to the closest reaches of our neighborhoods. Faith is all around us. Faith springs from a glorious past forward to a promising future. The faith that those who not so quietly defeated rivals and redefined record books would inspire their brethren of today to reach such epic accomplishments. And all along, there are those who cheer. In their minds, they envision. In their hearts, they believe. And because of that, they are simply known as the faithful.
Wow. Can it be any more obvious what they're trying to tap into in our hearts and in our souls? Have you seen that before, any of you? It's so clear that they're forming a religious 49er family, is what they're trying to do. And they're using the universal human need to believe in something or someone to fill the void in people's lives that faith in God is meant to fill. Now, the marketer for the 49ers must have read the Time magazine article a few years ago that discussed the scientific studies about our genetic propensity for religious belief and our need for faith. The article, you may have remembered, was titled The God Gene, and it was after a book by Dean Hammer about how faith is hardwired into our genes. Now, Hammer is a behavioral geneticist at the National Institutes of Health, and they stand by his research that shows spirituality is just part of our human nature. Hammer explains that spirituality is a sense or feeling of transcendence. He says the reason for hundreds of religions in the world is due to spirituality being part of our innate makeup. But the type of spirituality we practice is greatly influenced by where we live, by our families, and Hammer adds, some people have a bit more capacity for faith than others, but it's present to some degree in everybody. Now, Dr. Hammer also looked at the increase in brain chemicals when people are in deep meditative states, such as Zen practitioners and Roman Catholic nuns who pray for long periods of time each day. He said there's one gene that he called VMAT2, controls the chemical flow to the brain that relays emotions. He said there are more than one gene, but his research focus was on the functioning of this particular one to show how our genes predispose us to believe in something greater than ourselves. Now, those who analyzed Hammer's findings, because he did have a lot of skeptics kind of come after him, those who analyzed it, though, think the notion of a universal genetic propensity towards things spiritual may actually generate a greater understanding among people of different faiths. It is clear that culture, history, and environment determine whether one is a Christian, Hindu, Jew, Buddhist, or Muslim. No matter what faith the innate spirituality causes one to develop, it can be enhanced, though, he said, through meditation, prayer, music, painting, and worship. Now, Dr. Dean Hammer admits that he originally himself had trouble with religion when he became a scientist. But as he conducted the research for his book on the God Gene, he discovered personal meaning in his own intuitive sense of God's presence that developed. And he said, "We do not know God, we feel God." And now, considering a psychological approach to the science of faith, Carl Jung approached the idea of inherent tendency to develop faith in the divine by analyzing the development of the ego. According to Carl Jung expert Dr. Joyce Hudson, she said he believed religion is a natural process. And she believes the story of the ego is the story of human life with God. She said the fact that the ego follows a natural course of development means that there is a natural process at the core of our religious life. And within the unconscious inner world of every human being, there is the potential for human wholeness. This potential operates naturally like an instinct and seeks integration and fulfillment as we grow. And in our own culture, she said, Jesus is the most widely recognized image of wholeness. And yet there are many other forms, she said, found in nature that arise naturally from the unconscious that we do associate with Christ. And then she points out that flowers, especially the rose, is a natural symbol of wholeness in nature that we connect to Jesus. So isn't that perfect for our church? We're on the right track. And Hudson goes on to say that what is religious is natural. And understanding this natural process helps us see that God and nature are one. So actually, the people who don't develop a religious kind of way of thinking and try to develop their spirituality are kind of going against the grain of natural development. And now neurobiologist Dr. Andrew Newberg, he agreed with this idea of faith developing naturally when he spoke at a Pew Forum on how our brains are wired for belief. He defined belief both biologically and psychologically as any perception, cognition, emotion, or memory that a person consciously or unconsciously assumes to be true. So that's a very general kind of description of belief. But Newberg conducted many brain studies at the University of Pennsylvania with a focus on how beliefs form physiologically. He asked the question, why are religion and spirituality so ingrained in humans in every culture and over all of time? Because archaeologists have even found evidence of the very first human people on this earth showing signs that they were worshiping different ways, you know, from the things that they found in archaeology digs. One of the reasons that he came up with is that neurons that fire together wire together. So the neurons in your brain that fire together, he said, wire together. And he said he found that by looking at brain scans, the more you use a particular pathway of neurons, the stronger they become connected to each other. That's why regular prayer practice changes your brain and helps the prayer feel more peaceful over time. And you can see that with language, too. The more you practice a language, the easier it gets. The more you pray, the easier it gets. So Newberg also asked the question, why doesn't God go away? He concluded that religion and spirituality helps humans maintain and transcend. Faith helps our mental health, our ability to cope with various issues and problems, and therefore it helps us maintain ourselves. It also provides a system that helps us transcend ourselves. Both science and religion help us to better understand the totality of our universe and our purpose in it. And the ways in which we make sense of that universe is often through our belief system. Now, Dr. Francis Collins, the director of the National Institutes of Health, is an example of someone who learned to transcend himself and develop a faith in something greater, despite growing up with atheist parents. It all started when Collins went to medical school, and he felt profoundly affected by observing how spirituality helped his patients cope with their illnesses. He witnessed many cases where his patients' faith provided a strong reassurance of peace in this world or the next that helped them cope much better than his patients with no faith. Dr. Collins admits in his book called The Language of God, A Scientist Presents Evidence for Belief, that he was arrogant and willfully blind to all the evidence pointing him to God until one day he had a sensation of ice cracking under his feet. He said it was a terrifying experience to realize he could rely no more on his atheistic position and was now going to be answerable to something bigger than himself. So in defiance, he began to search out reasons to not believe in God. And after reading about all the many religions of the world, he turned to a friend and asked a friend for help. And his friend suggested that he read C.S. Lewis's book called Mere Christianity. And since Lewis had become a Christian as an adult too, his friend thought he could relate to it. In the book, Lewis addressed the same objections to faith that Dr. Collins pondered. Both Lewis and Collins tried to disprove faith in God based on logical argument. But the argument that connected most deeply for Dr. Collins was in the first chapter of Mere Christianity titled, Right and Wrong as a Clue to the Meaning of the Universe. Collins agreed with Lewis that moral law, or the law of right behavior, is a universal feature of human existence that we all apply when judging an action or making any decision. Now, this sense of right and wrong is intrinsic in being human, and it leads to altruistic behavior and causes us to admire people like Mother Teresa more than Rupert Murdoch, for instance. The golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, is a basic universal tenet of moral law. And so Francis Collins, though, kept searching his way towards faith as he practiced as a young doctor. But he took a giant leap forward when he participated in a medical mission trip to Nigeria. He reported that it was in Nigeria where he learned how to deal with his longing to feel close to God through prayer. He said, prayer is not an opportunity to manipulate God into doing what you want God to do. Prayer is a way of seeking fellowship with God, learning about God, and attempting to perceive God's perspective on many issues around us that may cause us distress or confusion or wonder. So in Nigeria, he felt so much comfort by being able to pray, when I think he was way out of his comfort zone when he got there. And as he kept searching to find a way closer to God, he came to the realization that Jesus was his bridge to God. He said his newfound faithfulness to God required of him a kind of death of self-will and a trust in Jesus. But first he had to research who Jesus really was. So he read all the New Testament accounts of Christ's life in detail. And despite having great admiration for other spiritual traditions, Collins surrendered his life to Jesus one day when he was out hiking in the Cascade Mountains. He said he felt his search for the answer to faith was over when he came upon a beautiful frozen waterfall hundreds of feet high. God spoke to him through this spectacle of nature and called him to just trust and have faith. Now today for Dr. Collins, Christianity provides what he calls the special ring of eternal truth. But he recommends that everyone conduct their own personal search to trust and have faith. So many scientists like Francis Collins and theologians have pondered these questions about why people have faith. So a new field of inquiry has developed called neurotheology. Neurotheology attempts to explain religious experience and behavior in neuroscientific terms. So another article titled, "Are We Hardwired for God?" credits the limbic system deep within the brain for emotion and faith. So the first one credited a gene, now this one credits your brain. Ron Joseph, a prominent neurotheologian, says the limbic system is dotted with God neurons and God neurotransmitters. The brain structures associated with religious belief are the hypothalamus, and it's probably hard to see from back there, but they're all deep in the center of your brain, the hypothalamus, the amygdala, and the hippocampus, or the hippocampus is the way they say it, hippocampus. Now, consistent changes in these areas can be detected by MRI scans when the research subjects engage in religious meditations and prayer. And although some scientists still challenge the idea that our brains are made for faith in God, the findings overwhelmingly point to our brains being structured in a way to respond to things spiritual and transcendent. And so if you see these other slides that show them light up in different colors, you can see one is what they call a prayer scan, which shows the inner part of the brain going more black and getting wider during prayer than the one on the other side that is more purple in the center. So it's those black areas that got bigger. And in here, it's the yellow areas that got bigger and the red areas decreased during prayer. So they're looking at all of these, and these are different slices of the brain and looking at different parts of them to see what happens. I think science has proven that our brains are hardwired to seek spiritual connections, and our genes do facilitate an innate capacity for spirituality and compassion. And I believe the marketing staff for the 49ers were very smart to inspire faith in their team, as if they could fill that need that we all have for something to believe in. However, after such a dismal season this year, many of the faithful have fled. 49ers shirted people were cursing the 49ers as if they had been personally offended by their loss at one of the games I attended last fall. When we were walking out of the stadium, I couldn't believe how people were acting like they were going to go kill them. It just was crazy. But this is the trouble when we put faith in man-made things, isn't it? They only temporarily fulfill our needs, and when they disappoint us, we feel betrayed by them. And that's how they were acting, like they had been betrayed. They had put all their faith in them and were disappointed. So the lesson from the 49er Faithful campaign should be, never put your faith in humans. That's what they should say. Instead, put your faith in something that will never leave you or forsake you. Only faith in God can truly satisfy that thirst in your soul longings. And I believe that, like King David, that only God can protect you in the shadow of his wings, hold you fast, heal you, and authentically, steadfastly love you as your creator and redeemer. Amen.